Hi, this is Steve O'Mooney, and you're listening to another great show only on the 4i Radio Network. For more great shows, feel free to check out www.4iradio.com.
Walloping web snappers! My spider sense is tingling.
Spider sense tells me I'm in for some trouble.
Anybody else's spider sense tingling?
Welcome to Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where we dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. I'm Doug.
And I'm Derek.
And is your spider sense tingling?
I don't know. I didn't think of anything for this Ask Us Anything episode. Even though I put the notes together and saw that I'd have to be doing this.
You said I could ask you anything, and I've asked you if your spider sense is tingling. How dare you not have an answer?
That's true. Yeah. Oh, God. I should have been prepared. What's wrong with me?
To listen to this show, find us on 4iradio.com and wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is brought to you by Revenge Lover Designs, illustration and design that fit your personality. For samples and inquiries, visit revengelover.com. And of course, we would like to take a quick moment to thank our spectacular patrons, Bo, Carl, Eric, Katie, and Jason.
Yes.
It's a Ask Us Anything.
It is.
Y'all know how
I was
going to
say something there, because I feel like there was we both took a breath in as if we were going to say something, and then neither of us actually followed up with that.
Waiting for the other person to say something. Like, I'm going to breathe in so you think I'm going to say something, so that doesn't seem like I'm just sitting here. But in fact,
yep, these are casual episodes.
They are. Yes,
there are fun little mailbag / check in / talk about whatever the fuck we want episodes.
Yeah. And lately, a nice way to like wind down after covering a big chunk of a show.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty much. Yeah. It's like I need a break. We need to not prepare notes beforehand and just
a palate cleanser.
Shoot
you know?
An episode out. Yeah. Nice. Nice palate cleanser. I agree.
Untangle our brains a little bit from trying to figure out what the showrunners are doing.
Yeah, seriously. And honestly, real talk, this was kind of a last minute one. We didn't even really beg for questions very much with this. It was like one call. Some people saw it, some people didn't. So we don't really have that many questions for it, which is fine, because this is also like kind of a filler episode because my schedule is insane and hard to schedule.
You're busy.
Episodes for.
Okay.
A little busy right now. So
you have a life.
Mm-hmm.
You do things.
Yeah, so this is like going to be even more casual than the casualness of our normal episodes, really.
We're doing whatever we want.
Which honestly, I think people are here for. I like hearing what I like, the podcasts that I like. I just like hearing the hosts just like shoot the shit sometimes.
Yeah,
and it's honestly sometimes more fun than their regular structured episodes. So
yeah, I do like hearing folks sort of like talk outside of their typical topic, which is nice.
Yeah,
hopefully
absolutely.
Folks like when we do that too, because we're about to do it.
Yeah, yeah, and if not, then you'll listen to the next.
You've
episode
got a week off
instead. Yeah, there you go. You got a week off, like it's your job to listen to podcasts.
How do I get that job?
Right,
I'd gladly do that for money.
I think that's just like being an engineer or producer of a podcast at a major network, probably.
I was going to say, good clarification, because technically we produce this podcast and are also the engineers and also the editors, and we do not get paid.
And also the hosts and also the researchers.
We are the
also
talent.
Also the marketers.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Honestly, if I could just pay someone to just do like the social media stuff for our podcast, like already, that would be such a load off, and also
honestly,
probably better than what we do and would get more people.
I would, you and me both, if I could pay someone to edit even just some of our episodes, like that would be so nice, you know what I mean?
Right.
It would be nice, but you know, we're just a little independent podcast over here doing
we're
our
just
best
little guys.
We're just little guys. Yeah,
little guys.
We're just little guys with a podcast,
little guys.
And y'all are little guys. I mashed all those syllables together. Y'all are just little guys who asked us some questions. So thank you to everyone who sent them in. I suppose we can just dive into some of those.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Let's do it.
So Phoebe Bumbleflip on Discord. Check out our Discord. Join our Discord. There should be a link in the show notes.
Sure,
they asked, What show that you've covered was the least like you expected it would be? Which is a great question. I don't think we've ever gotten before.
No, that's a really good question.
Yeah. Do you have an answer ready to go?
Not really. Like, my first instinct is Ultimate Spider-Man, and that might be a recency bias thing because we've literally just been covering it. And I do think with that one, it's not that I didn't expect it to be a fun comedy show. Like, it obviously, I knew that that's what it was, and it is. But I think the complexity of it and the many different things it tries to do and the weird level of diversity in types of episodes they do.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized, even having seen some of the show before ever doing the podcast, I guess I hadn't seen enough of it, and I hadn't really thought about it enough, and I hadn't really clicked with me just how different so many of those episodes are from each other. To the point that it's like kind of hard to wrap your head around. Like, even after doing 13 episodes of it, I don't know that I can clearly like pass judgment on that batch of 13 on like thumbs up or thumbs down for it. You know what I mean? Like,
usually after like, 13 episodes, honestly, usually after a handful of episodes, we can kind of guess at what the thesis of a show or a season is. Mm-hmm. And there's no way with what we've watched of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah. I think that probably there's plenty of other shows where, like, you know, it kind of varies. I think also it's hard too, 'cause like I'd seen the majority of shows beforehand. I guess. And I don't know. There's been like stuff where it's like maybe the depth of it surprised me a little bit, maybe, or like 2017. I think I didn't.
That's my
think
answer.
That I'd, yeah. Well, go ahead. Yeah. I've talked enough.
No, that, no, know, no, no. I'm not saying that to cut you off. I'm just saying like it makes sense that comes up as one of the things you thought of, because that's fully my answer. Like,
yeah.
I think the distinction you were drawing makes a lot of sense. Whether you had already seen even just a chunk of them prior to what you and I started doing versus not, because we're in different camps on that. You had seen at least some of most of what we've talked about, and I had not seen most of what we had talked about, right? So I hadn't seen Spectacular, hadn't seen Unlimited, hadn't seen any of 2017, MTV. The only one that we've sort of gotten into that I had seen some of and had any sort of memory was Ultimate, because I did watch that. Not the whole thing, but I'd watched chunks of it prior to doing what we were doing. And then I'd seen like bits and bobs of like the old ones, like the 80s ones.
And you've seen the 90s show, obviously.
The 90s one is the one. Yeah, the 90s one is the one that I had seen everything of. But 2017 to me, I think, is the most or the least like I expected it to be. And fair or not, it's just that it's way better than I expected it based on its reputation. Its reputation is so bad. And I don't know why, because, I do know why, but it's frustrating when the why is simply bad faith, right? Like, when the why isn't built on anything other than it's just not the show I grew up with, like, that it's frustrating. I mean, there is no why there to know, you know? So 2017 had this terrible reputation of being so, I think, like, flimsy and weak and uninteresting and all these things. And it's not. It's a well-told, at least for the first season, is a well-told, like, serialized story that doesn't really miss beats that often. You know, like, it's not perfect. It's not as tight as Spectacular is, but it's the closest to Spectacular of any show we've covered.
Yeah, I agree. And some people would absolutely fucking like slaughter you for saying that, but it is the
truth. Even if they don't like it, they're wrong. Is. Like, storytelling structure-wise, it is the closest to Spectacular. Of any show we've covered, even the 90s show, like, it gets into long-term storytelling, but the way it tells stories, how they write those stories, how they present those stories is not as similar to Spectacular structure as 2017 is.
Yeah. And I think there's a heart that 2017 has that Spectacular also has that's there that a lot of Spider-Man shows just kind of don't have.
Yeah.
And they don't always need to have it, you know, like I don't think that Amazing Friends is any less of a show for not having like an emotional core to it or whatever.
No, it's not like a prerequisite for my enjoyment or even the show's success.
But I think that is an aspect that 2017 really nails of just like these bonds that friends have and the sort of the complex emotions and conflicts that come from that, especially with the Peter and Harry relationship, that like we've really never have gotten to that extent.
Harry's incredible.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, the impression I got from it was that it was sort of like this soulless sort of show built out of the machine. And in many ways, we can see that. Like, we know when it's there. But I can't call that show soulless when the heart of it is the relationship between Peter and Harry, and that is an incredibly successful relationship that they're depicting.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really good. So that's that to me. I mean, as much as I would love for Unlimited to be my answer, that show's exactly what I expected. I just didn't think I'd love it as much as I do.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
My only surprise was how absolutely attached I am and quantumly entangled I am to that show.
It's very funny. Can I ask you a follow-up question then?
Of course.
Because I feel like another... What did you expect the MTV show was going into it before you watched it? Because I know you didn't think it was what it was, but I'm curious like how if you had any expectations at all and how different it was from your expectations.
I wish I could remember. I wonder how much we talked about this on the episodes themselves, or at least that first one. Because I don't know what my expectation was. Like, I don't think I expected a lot from it, because I just sort of assumed it would be, sort of like a cringy CGI version of, Spider-Man. I don't know. Like,
yeah, sure.
The CGI is better than I would have expected it to be. That's certainly something. Like, it's not a shit show as far as like the actual animation and style goes. But I don't know. I know I couldn't have expected it to be what it is. I don't know if I had strong expectations for it though.
Sure. I was just curious.
Yeah. I feel like you had probably told me at some point, like, it's like not either darker or either more explicitly like for, like an older audience than it is a kid's audience, but that doesn't necessarily like dictate my expectations for what the stories and values of the show are going to be, you know?
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
I have a coworker who just is like, they're making their way through a bunch of Spider-Man cartoons. Uh-huh. And they just watched Spectacular and they really liked that one. And then the next one they watched was the MTV one. And they told me they were going to watch it. And I was like, I'm just going to tell you outright, I hate that show. He was like, okay. And then he watched it. And when he finished it, I was like, what do you think? He's like, it's not for me. I was like, exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
It's like, well, I wasn't going to tell you not to watch it. I know I wasn't going to be able to convince you, but I at least needed you to know that if you end up really liking it, don't come in and tell me how much you loved it, because I don't love it.
Oh, boy. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think any of the other ones we've covered have really shattered expectations for me, though. Even the ones I hadn't seen, like I mentioned, Unlimited, it's what I expected. I just didn't expect to like it. 2013, I didn't really have or 2003 MTV didn't really have expectations. Ultimate, I kind of knew what to expect. The old shows, I kind of knew what to expect.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Makes sense. That makes sense. For sure. Well, HPG on Discord asked a few questions. First question: who would you cast for Kraven the Musical? And the reference is specifically to a panel from a Spider-Man comic where in the background there's a movie poster with an image of Tom Selleck as Kraven. It says Tom Selleck, Kraven the Musical, which is a truly dream casting, honestly. Like, I would go for that in that time period where Tom Selleck could have done the role. I would have been interested. I don't know if he's a good singer or not, but I would have liked to see it.
I also agree that would be amazing. But also, is this not a picture of Matthew McConaughey? Like, I know it's Tom Selleck, but is this not also Matthew McConaughey? It looks like Matthew McConaughey.
I still see Tom Selleck more than I see Matthew McConaughey.
I don't know. I
see what you're getting at with the facial structure.
They literally traced a picture of Matthew McConaughey.
I see what you're getting at with the facial structure, but I don't know. I don't see Matthew McConaughey as much as you do in this image. No,
I can't unsee it. It's impossible. But I don't know. I feel kind of woefully unprepared to cast someone in a musical.
Well, but it's hard to tell because, like, sometimes
you never know who's like trained but just doesn't do it.
But also, like, you don't necessarily need to sing to be in a Broadway musical thing, like, depending on the part. Like, I sometimes it's not a...
I was going to say, I feel like you're walking a dangerous road, but I see what you're saying.
You know, like, and I'm not saying that that's a good or a bad thing, because sometimes it's fine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just like, oh, you got them because they're a celebrity, and this is pretty catastrophic. Like, yeah. It can go either way. You don't necessarily... Like, some musical parts... You can talk, sing that, or like, I don't know. I feel like Carol Channing is always my go-to because I think she's an amazing performer.
Carol Channing as Craven.
Not as Craven. Although I wouldn't be mad about seeing it, but like, I think just she's someone who is an amazing performer and has such an amazing, distinct voice. But like, you wouldn't call her like a traditionally good singer. You know what I mean? Like, sure. The way that she performs makes it work. And if she has to belt something out, she probably, I've never seen her try, but I imagine she probably wouldn't be good at a role that where you have to belt something out, but she is good in musicals for like the parts that she is good at because her voice is so distinct and she is good at performing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel
so like, and I feel like with something like, wasn't it like Craven? I could see it one way. I mean, I guess he'd probably be the star of the musical, so you probably would have to sing
Craven the musical.
Yeah, so I don't think that would really work. So I think you would probably have to find someone who can sing. I mean, like Hugh Jackman's an easy answer for that.
Right, is at the top of the list when I Google Hollywood actors on Broadway.
Right, and I don't know. I mean, and he's played like any like Wolverine and Craven are kind of similar DNA. Yeah. You know, like
I think
not,
for that
it
reason,
wouldn't
I would not
go-to.
Like to see it.
It's not who my go-to would be, but like I think it would be an easy answer for that.
What about someone like David Diggs? Who's been on Broadway, who can act, who isn't necessarily like a sort of like mainstream Hollywood face, like
I think
feeling
I like
outside
that.
Of the context of Broadway?
Yeah, I think I like that a lot, actually.
I'm just looking at a list of people who've done both, you know?
Yeah.
And things like Nick Jonas does not appeal to me, or Sean Hayes, as much as I appreciate Sean Hayes, does not stand out to me.
No.
Yeah, I like Daniel David Radcliffe, Diggs, love you, don't think Craven's your part. But David Diggs, I feel like, could pull it off.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun.
Especially if he's the protagonist.
Yeah, I could see that.
Jeremy Piven as Craven. Short King Craven the Hunter.
I mean, I would be okay with a short King Craven the Hunter, really.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at it. This is obviously a very limited list, but of this list, the only one that struck any real inspiration to me was David Diggs. Jason Alexander as Craven the Hunter.
Oh, yes. I
mean, he'd
to
have to
that.
Be shirtless, at least a little bit. So
I desperately want to see Jason Alexander as Craven the Hunter in Craven the Musical. That sounds magical. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I could appreciate it for sure.
Look, would it be good? Probably not. But would I pay so much money to see that? A 100%.
Right? Oh, yeah. Would I make the trip? Absolutely.
That's I like so funny. That answer. Yeah. I mean, for that. That's a funny question.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yep. I think the Sony should make their rated R Craven movie a musical, actually. And I think
I saw that today. That it will, because of just timing, will end up being their first MCU connected, I guess, technically, first rated R movie, which is sort of a cop out because it's like not, right?
Yeah, because Venom was rated R, right?
Right. Like, I don't exactly. Understand. So I don't know really what clarification weird. They're making.
Like, is he going to be naked in it? That's the only justification for making a rated R, in my opinion. And I'm not even saying, what's his name? I want to call him Anya Taylor-Joy. That's not his name. It's Aaron something something. Aaron Taylor Green? Is that his name?
I think that's his name. Quicksilver?
Yeah. I mean, I know I've seen him in a million movies. Yeah. I just can't. Aaron Taylor-Joy.
Anya Taylor-Joy in the role. I'll take it.
Anya Taylor-Joy in the role would be fun. I'm not saying that I really need to see him naked, because I'm neither here nor there on him. But Craven himself as a character, I think he is better when he's nude a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense for who he is.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be rated R, then you should show some fucking dong, man. Like, come on. You got to do
Aaron
that.
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Okay.
Aaron, show us your Johnson.
Yes. Yes. It's
as
destined.
Craven.
It's destiny.
Yeah. This is like his third like comic superhero slash antihero whatever role. Because
he did
it, at least
he did Kick-Ass, he did Quicksilver, and now he's this.
Yeah.
He's one of those actors that has grown on me. I've been like back and forth on him, but I liked him in Godzilla, and I liked him in Tenet too. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect from the Kraven movie. I don't expect it to be good, but I want to be surprised. I hope to be surprised.
So. I also would like to be surprised. Yeah. That would be nice. Because I'm not expecting to love it.
but we'll see. We'll see. You know, I wasn't expecting to love Venom Let There Be Carnage either. So
If they keep doing like Monster Camp, I'm going to be here for it. You know, he's not a monster, so I don't know what they would do with that, but.
Yeah, I don't
they
know.
Can we'll certainly see. Make Kraven camp. It's not hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know.
HPG also asked, which of you two like me more and why?
Funny
well,
question.
HPG yeah. and I have hung out on Discord before, so I don't know if you have. I don't know your life, but I would argue that maybe I like HPG more. I don't know.
Well,
what you got? Fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we were on Discord together when we did a group watch of the 60s mm-hmm. show. So it wasn't solo, but I have been Discord with HPG. So I feel like that evens it out. So I think we're on an even playing field, actually.
Gotcha.
What else you got?
Trying to think of like what we've had conversations about that I can pull something from. What have we bonded over, HPG? What have we bonded over?
Yeah.
What can I throw in Derek's face?
Damn. This is hard.
I played Arcade Spirits, which I believe a friend of HPG's maybe was a developer on.
Oh my God. Wow. What a
or
pull.
Something to that effect.
Damn. I guess you win. I guess you win. Because I don't have a video for that reason,
right, HPG?
I don't have a video game developer connection, so I don't think I'm not sure where I could go from there.
You better step it up, buddy.
I thought I was just going to be like, oh, you liked a tweet of mine one time, and you're like, yeah, I played a video. Like, I don't know, yeah, what the fuck? I wasn't even that come out in the conversation.
I think I must have tweeted like a screenshot of it or something like that, or maybe I was talking about it in the Discord, and he mentioned that he knew somebody. I think that
that's so funny
that worked on the game. I don't remember what the role was, but it was a cool realization.
Like, small of a world. It is sometimes.
I know, right? It's kind of incredible.
It's pretty wild. Yeah. Yeah.
So fun. Well, I guess we'll just have to keep fighting over at HPG. You'll have to let us know.
The biggest argument we've ever had in the history of this podcast.
I know. Exactly.
Yes, one more question. Anything you two are specifically looking forward to this summer? Movies, games, books, TV, anything like that. For this summer specifically. I feel like a lot of stuff opens this summer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Elementals this summer, Across the Spider-Verse this summer.
When is
I'm
the Barbie
for
movie?
Guardians 3, if that counts as summer. It's like in a couple weeks. That might be spring.
Is that really in a couple weeks?
May 5th, yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know when I'm going to be able to have time to see that movie.
You're not.
I want to. I'm not going to. No, I can see like a show at like 10:30 at night probably.
Yeah. When does Barbie movie come out? It comes out July. Oh, that's right. It comes out my freaking birthday weekend.
Oh shit. Nice.
Or whenever that is. It comes out the day before my birthday. So July 21st.
Excited for that. Yeah, Doug, are you going to see excited. Barbie or Oppenheimer that day?
Oh fuck, how will I decide? Sometimes it really is an embarrassment of riches. Like my birthday is at a pretty fortunate spot where it could end up being like a pretty massive like summer blockbuster weekend. And sometimes it'll be like competing movies. So it can be really exciting. But I'm sorry, Oppenheimer, you have no chance. No chance. We're seeing Barbie, okay? Me and the girlies are going out.
Yeah, I'm so pumped for Barbie. The Riverdale finale is like right around my birthday in August. I think it's like the day after my birthday, or maybe the day before. It's like right around that. I'm looking forward to just continuing the whole final season of Riverdale, but then the series finale, which not that I'm like excited for it to end, but I am excited to see how it ends. So I'm very excited for that this summer as well.
I know I've mentioned it before, but I think that Jamie Loftus's book comes out in the summer or late, maybe like right before the summer, late May, maybe the dog book.
Nice.
There was some other book I was thinking of and I can't remember for the life of me what it is.
No.
That I was excited for. I was like, I won't need to write it down. I'll remember it. I'm excited for it. False.
I'm also excited. I've already read 5 of the 6 issues, but I'm excited for the Pink Lemonade trade.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
No way.
That's,
really?
Yes. That's what I was trying to remember. Yes. I'm very excited for Nick Cagnetti's Pink Lemonade trade to come out this summer. Cause that also, I think, July. Comes out in July, like right around when the Barbie movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to be treating myself.
I had no idea that yes. was what you were thinking.
No,
that's
exactly what it was. When I was like walking back from the store today, I was like, oh, that's right. That's what I'll bring up. I won't need to write that down. I'm so glad you said that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Summer TV doesn't typically inspire, I don't think.
Nothing, but like times don't matter. There's a swing. Shows drop at any given time nowadays, though. So like, there's no such thing as summer TV anymore, I feel like.
Well, you don't watch a lot of network TV, I don't think, do you? I think seasons still exist over there.
I mean, yes. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like there's still always shows dropping
off.
It's not like it's the barren wasteland that it used to be during the summer. You know what I mean? Right. I know like all your reality show stuff, like that's different.
Yeah, those still happen in traditional season. So I was trying to think like,
sure.
Am I excited for Big Brother? Not usually. Will I watch it? Begrudgingly, you know? So can't say that I'm excited for that. Summer is not great for even the stuff that I watch. But I don't know when a lot of the streaming stuff, even just like the Disney Plus sort of brands stuff is supposed to drop. I just know it is.
I feel like because it's just like 2 weeks before, it's sort of like, oh, I guess that's happening. And then
you
may or may not watch it. Like that's kind of how it is now. There's not really the same buildup of excitement for a new season of something as there used to be.
Because honestly, they're maybe oversaturating at this point, too. I don't know.
Oversaturating and also too big of gaps between seasons are two
somehow
big problems.
The same
television.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know when it cannot be this summer because I think they just filmed it or are filming it. But the Star Wars series Acolyte. No, that's next year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Never mind. I am very excited for that, though, because it's the High Republic.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun. I need to read. I liked the High Republic comics that I'd read. I want to read more of them.
I just started listening again to the first High Republic book to like refresh myself on like how that was all set up.
I have that on my Audible, but I haven't listened to it.
Oh, nice.
The
new Star Wars games comes out in like a couple weeks, I think. Did you play that? The Jedi Fallen Order?
No, I have not played any.
I'm playing it now. It's nice. Good.
Nice.
Did you ever play any of the Uncharted games?
No, I never played
the Uncharted. It has very similar vibes, and I really like those.
Okay. That's fun. When does Ahsoka come out? Is that like the next Star Wars thing that was coming out?
That is a great question.
I haven't even watched this season of Mandalorian yet, so I don't know why I'm acting like I'm excited. Or actually, I haven't watched Andor either. I don't know why I'm like acting all excited for Star Wars stuff that I'm not caught up on at all.
But here's the thing. I'm not going to be caught up. And even if I'm not caught up by the time Ahsoka drops, I'll watch Ahsoka. I do not care.
That's true.
That's like my favorite Star Wars character. So.
Sure.
And that is August 2023. So that counts. That is definitely summer. Nice.
Cool. Yeah. I'm excited for that. Yeah, I do want to watch this season of Mandalorian. I just haven't gotten around to it. That's been funny because I feel like I keep seeing like people just like, oh, this season sucks. And then it'll be like images of like the coolest fucking puppet I've ever seen in my life or like a celebrity I love in like beautiful costumes. And I'm like, I don't see what you're seeing here, I guess, but I'll find out.
I know. I've heard the same thing. And like I also feel like my barometer for Star Wars, like, how I like Star Wars things or what I need to be met for me to enjoy a Star Wars thing. I feel like it's just not the same as like whoever shouting on the internet. So
it seems like people take Star Wars very seriously sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just the vibe that I get, you know, I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know, man. It might just be a you thing. I've never heard that before.
It might just be a you thing. Yeah.
So there's plenty of stuff coming out, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure I'll think of something the moment we stop recording.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Let's see. We got a question on Instagram from Stark Wars Pod.
Speaking of Star Wars, that's
fun. I know, right? unless this is a war between the many versions of Tony Stark. I don't think it is.
Definitely is not.
It is definitely not. Wasn't there something where, like, Tony Stark, didn't, like, a young version of Tony Stark, like, time travel and, like, take over the mantle of Iron Man from, like, aging Tony Stark or something like that? Am I making this up?
That sounds so fucking stupid that I'm sure, 100% sure that definitely happened.
I feel like it happened. Somebody who knows comics, tell me if that happened or if I just totally made that up. Am I just ripping off the X-Men thing that they did? I don't know.
I mean, no.
Anyways, Stark Wars Pod asked us, what are your least favorite colors and why?
This is so funny because I feel like I was thinking recently that, like, colors that I like have evolved, because I feel like for a long time I don't hate them, but I feel like stuff on, like, the brown and yellow spectrum, I never really particularly liked very much. And I was having a conversation.
Wolverine's going to kill you.
I know, right? But I feel like, I think I was having a conversation maybe with my book club a while back or something, where it was like, I think I actually like the color yellow, like, now, like, it's, like, moved up a lot in my ranks, like, just in, like, recent years. And I don't know why, but, like, I'm just sort of like I bought, like, a yellow flannel not too long ago that I really like just like in like yellow accents and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never had it, I never despised the color yellow, but it would, like, I would like it only as like an accent to something else. And now I'm sort of like, as a whole, the color yellow actually pretty rad, and I don't really know what's changed other than my taste. Brown I'm still like pretty neutral on, but the color yellow, I don't know, I'm liking a lot more. And I never
On the ultimate neutral color.
I know, right? But yeah. Oh wow. I've met people who say brown is their favorite color.
Oh, I'm for, like, sure.
Okay, I mean, sure.
Yeah, I do feel like people who say, and I, you know, I'm, there's always exceptions, I'm sure, I'm not, you know, whatever, but I feel like most people I meet who say brown is their favorite color are also very fashionable. Like, I feel like it somehow relates to fashion.
Interesting.
But, you know, I'm, the moment someone out there whose favorite color is brown hears that, they're like, I don't like fashion. It's interesting you say that about yellow, because I don't like vehemently hate any colors or anything like that, but I definitely have favorites and least favorites. Yellow is definitely low for me, but this year in particular, for some reason, I feel like yellow has been playing, I wouldn't even say like I like it more, but I feel like yellow has played a significant role in my year for some reason. And so I'm trying to embrace yellow more as a color and see where that takes me, which probably sounds totally meaningless, but I just thought it was interesting that you mentioned you like yellow more lately. And I feel like yellow has been like appearing in my life a lot this year.
Is yellow just like in the universe right now or something?
I don't know.
Like, really?
Maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe. No clue. But my actual answer for least favorite color is red. Red's my least favorite color. I don't hate red or anything. It's just, it's like a strong, aggressive color. It like, I don't necessarily like wearing red. The thought of like people who paint like an entire room red, that would like stress me out. Or like people who have like red lights in their room instead of like a white or a yellow light or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, how do you do that? I just like don't vibe with like that much red. It's like too intense for me.
Yeah. I mean, I like red quite a lot. Like I have like, you know, a lot of, the anchor points in my living room is like the color red on one side of my living room.
Mm-hmm.
I would also never paint an entire room red. That seems like a serial killer.
It seems like a lot, right? But people do it. People definitely do it. And it just seems like too much.
People do a lot of stuff.
I know. It's just, red is so intense. I also feel like yellow is typically considered like a, a somewhat anxiety-inducing color. But I feel like that would depend on the specific, like, hue shade of yellow, you know?
Yeah. Any like, color that's, like, bright neon will, of I course. Think, can sort of fuck with you a little yeah. bit. Yeah.
It is interesting. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say yellow, that it's interesting because I do think that, like, I've never gotten a sense of anxiety from it, but I do think it's, like, I think a thing that I didn't like about it for a long time is that there is just, like, a weird, like, energy emanating from it. I think similar to the way that, like, red, like, it just feels aggressive. Like, yellow, it doesn't feel aggressive. It just feels, like, just too much, you know? Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, like, my feeling of that has just, like, softened so much over time. Where, yeah. like, it just doesn't feel as, even the brightest yellow just doesn't feel as intense to me as it ever used to, you know?
Someone out there is fascinated by this conversation because clearly, like, you and I are not people who, like, are fluent in sort of, like, the conversation of color and their energies and, like, auras and things like that. But yeah. someone out there is, you know? Right. And someone's probably listening to us being like, oh, my God, they're having revelations right now. Even yeah, though we have, like, no idea something. What we're saying.
Yeah. But it is funny, though, because I don't know the people... I don't like. I feel like there are people like on that side of the spectrum that you're talking about. They're very like intensely interested in that conversation and like what it represents and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the other side of the spectrum, probably the majority of people who are just like normal people are just like, I like the color purple because it's pretty. And like, we're just sort of like color yellow, like means something to me in my life. And like, I feel like the energy, like, I feel like you're either going to be like totally vibing with what we're talking about and finding deep meaning. Or you're just going to be like, what is this frou-frou hippie bullshit that these weirdos are talking about?
I think anybody who stops to think about how they feel yeah. about colors can get it.
It's the you same thing. I mean? I think like there's like associations that you make with things that I think like
yeah.
people, I think sometimes people don't think about, but it's like.
You're doing it anyway, even if you're not doing it consciously.
Right. Like I've always felt like even numbers feel warm to me and odd numbers feel cold to me.
Sure.
Like the number 7 feels very sharp, which I mean, I guess the actual like character of 7 is a sharp character, but like even like the feeling of it feels like icy and like sharp and painful, not in a way yeah. that like I don't like the number 7, but like if I'm thinking about what those numbers mean to me, that's like the initial, that's just what the feeling that I get from them. And I've yeah. always had that association like since childhood before I could even comprehend what that meant and just assumed that everyone felt the same way, and then got older and realized like, oh right. maybe my brain doesn't work the exact same way as everyone else's brain does, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think anybody who denies that that makes some kind of sense or that idea can resonate with them in some way, I think is sort of kidding themselves. Cause like everybody feels differently about mm-hmm. different colors or shapes or numbers or sounds. Like it's all the same thing. It's just how you're relating to a stimulus. We're just mm-hmm. talking about ones that you see as opposed to hear or feel, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, makes sense.
Someone out there can tell me what it means that I'm resonating particularly with yellow in this year. But I just am realizing that it has popped up a lot. And so I'm just letting it happen instead of being yeah. like, I don't like this color, you know?
It's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a cool thing to recognize too.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I like that they asked this question because, I was thinking today about a question I wanted to ask for this because we didn't have a ton of questions. Okay. So I was like, what can I ask? And I also had a color question. Okay. My question is, what is your favorite like hue of each color of the rainbow, right? Like if you think of the pride, and you don't have to do all 6 of them or anything, but like if you think of like the pride flag, like the sort of just 6 oh, yeah. stripe pride flag, if those are like the default hues of those colors, like what is your actual preferred hue of those colors?
So yeah, no, that's interesting. I do actually weirdly like primary red a lot, mm-hmm. like just very bright, intense red. And you know, like I said earlier, like I agree with you that red's kind of aggressive, but I think I kind of like the power of like a just a bright primary red.
I see you're a Power Rangers fan.
Just makes me feel like a leader, you know? Feel like I just want to use a sword. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. There's something to that like intensity, and I feel like that maybe is probably the only hue of a color like that that I really like the intensity of, but I just like how intense that is. Because like for like blues and purple, well, like for purple especially, I like a darker not indigo, but like getting closer in that direction kind of purple.
You know what? I know I asked you a question and I'm now going to cut you off. I think my actual least favorite color, and I'll explain why, because I feel like people have a reaction to this, is indigo. Because that's my brain insane. Struggles so hard to understand actual indigo, right? Like, not the dark blue that Crayola says indigo is, but like the actual color on the light spectrum that is indigo. My brain like cannot handle that. I don't think my brain is like advanced or evolved enough to like fully understand the concept of that color that is not blue and is not purple.
Yeah.
It frustrates me when I see actual indigo, I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. So
I think it makes sense. Yeah.
Sorry. You said indigo and I was very clearly triggered by the feeling I have when I look at real indigo.
But that is interesting though. Like the associations, the color associations we have, and like, you know, and who knows what you're seeing, like might be different from how I see indigo.
For sure.
And so like, and it might be like what you're seeing is like your brain and eyes just can't comprehend it in the same way that other people can, you know, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like darker hues of purple. Although I also, you know, I'm not really sure. I feel like that's what I always used to think. Cause I also used to really like navy. And I think that I like brighter shades now than I used to when I was younger. Like for both purple, I really like whatever, maybe kind of like a close to a royal purple, like whatever shade that like
Shu like Ranpo, royal bag
or Shu Ranpo from Q Ranger is like the shade of his skin and his Ranger shade are, I like that shade of purple a lot. And blue, I think similarly, I kind of like a grayish blue a lot. Mm-hmm. And like green, I really like kind of a lighter kind of pale green. And what other colors are there?
Orange.
I don't know. I guess orange, I guess I kind of like a primary orange too. Like I like different shades of it, but I think I like just a down the middle primary orange, I think works for me pretty well. And yellow kind of is the same way. So I guess I lied with the red primary colors because I actually like primary yellow and orange.
You
too.
Like your warm,
I
guess all colors the warm, very standard.
Yeah. I like my warm colors very standard because I think there's like an intensity to it that I think works for me with all of those. Mm-hmm. But then any cool colors, I guess I'm realizing now I like them to be more on the sort of like closer to like bright, like neutral. I guess it kind of depends. Like blue, I like it to be a much cooler, grayer. Green, I like it to be like paler, so less intense. And then purple, I kind of like, I guess, to be more intense if I'm thinking of like the Shu Ranpo kind of color.
Yeah.
It's sort of a brighter, like more intense purple. So yeah. Good question.
Nice. I find that really interesting. Yeah. I think because I don't love those warm, intense colors, most of mine end up being like muted in some way. So like red, I like a wine or like a maroon color way more than like a standard red that I can vibe with, you know.
Yeah.
Orange, like, you know, the Crayola crayon macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
I like that orange. I like that. But I also do like the standard orange. That's a really good one. Yellow, since I'm not super into it, although I feel pretty good about it, you know, this year. I would say like not the standard primary yellow, but like just more towards like goldenrod, which makes it sort of softer, I think. Mm-hmm. Bolder. I dig green's my favorite. Green and purple are my favorite colors. Green, I love like avocado green, like that.
Oh, that's
like
good,
everything in my kitchen that I can find in that sort of realm of green, I do. So like my Brita filter is like an avocado or olive. It's either one, it's going to be called avocado or olive. Like tons of stuff in my kitchen is that color. I find it incredibly relaxing, incredibly like peaceful, like that color. Blue is interesting because I would have been with you where I'd like either a navy blue or like a grayish blue, but I really like a sky blue, like that lighter sort of like baby blue. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've grown to really appreciate. And then purple, I also have another Crayola association. Do you remember the color plum from Crayola crayons?
Oh yeah.
It's like a purple with a bit more red in it, like a warmer, lighter purple, but with, you know, still like popping. I think that's probably my favorite purple.
I love it. Yeah.
Our pride flags would be a disaster.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, for sure. I also just like the color black as a like, I know it's not like a real color or whatever, but like, I like black as a, I don't know. I've sort of, and I don't even like, I feel like I've started to wear more black recently.
You and I are having opposite journeys.
Yeah. Well, cause I feel like
I used to wear tons of black and charcoal, and I feel like I'm lightening up and more and like coloring up my wardrobe.
See, I was like, you know, I was definitely, you know, in high school, you wore a lot of black t-shirts that have dumb sayings on it or whatever from Hot Topic. Like, you know, and I feel like I kind of consciously tried to go away from that and put more color in my wardrobe just cause I liked wearing more color and sort of refused to get those black t-shirts, I think, for years and years.
Yeah.
But then recently, I don't know, I've just like worn black and been like, I like it. Like, I like it now. So I don't know.
I shit you not. I have like 8 of the exact same like charcoal gray, nearly black V-neck t-shirts in my wardrobe.
Oh, I do still have, yeah, just like those, you know, those like sort of, or like the heather gray kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, those are still nice go-tos if you just like,
yeah,
want to just throw a shirt on. But
like for at least a few years, like 3 to 5 years, like that's like the only t-shirts I had were like basically black and gray t-shirts. And then like I had a few other V-necks that were different colors just in case. Like,
yeah,
for some reason, black was not the vibe.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Fun question. I love that.
Color questions now, since you
don't like the color, like intense color red very much,
yeah,
do you just like hate all of our Wallaby Web Snappers like marketing stuff and logos and everything?
No. Because
it's like a lot of intense red colors.
No, I mean, context matters, right? Like Spider-Man is red and blue in very like primary colors. So like context matters for sure. I mean, if I were doing my own branding for something, it wouldn't be red, but it would be weird not to have red in the branding for a Spider-Man thing. So no, I don't hate our branding because it's red.
Look, you know, I mean, so it's been like almost 200 episodes, but you know, we could change it if you really despised it.
What would you change it to? Green and purple? Those are Spider-Man villain colors.
I mean, it could be blue and yellow. Like, we've done that for things.
Yeah, that's X-Men shit. No. Context is good. It's also funny because like all of the podcasts I do are primary color branding. So like red for Walloping Web Snappers. Blue is our like patron feed color. Novel Gaming is blue. And then Falling with Style is blue. Victory Road has swapped between blue and yellow and is currently yellow. So it's funny, like I don't even use any of my own favorite colors for like any of what I am associated with branding wise.
That means you're a good designer because you're not just playing to like your personal favorite aesthetics, you're playing to like what's relevant to the product that you're
not just gonna make everything avocado green because I like it.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
that's what my kitchen is for.
exactly
all my towels are that color, you know. I have control in my life over that. I can give and take.
absolutely. I have a question for you then.
Okay.
And don't, there's a preface to it. Don't bristle at what I'm about to ask you because it's not the real question.
I won't.
So if I were like, Doug, you have to make a top 10 or 15 list of, I'm not going to actually ask you to do this, but if I were saying, if I were to ask you, like, you know, do like your top 10 or 15, most, you know, favorite memorable episodes of our podcast that you would recommend to people. What are the, like, you don't have to make the list. I'm never going to ask you to do that because I know you would absolutely hate it. But what are just like the first things that pop into your head when I say those words?
Oh my God. That's so hard because my memory is so garbage.
But I'm not even, that's why I'm not asking you to be like not making a serious list, but just like what cues in like of favorite just like podcast things that we've ever done.
Yeah.
Like what's the things that just pop into your head? I'm just curious. You
favorite
know?
Things we've done. With the caveat that I'm not making this list as the sort of like, here is your Doug and Derek podcast 101. Here's
absolutely
the sort of average vibe, because the average vibe is not going to be the stuff that stands out.
Right.
Losing Our Minds Over Frump will forever be one of my favorite podcast memories.
Yeah.
That it just, it's not even like a good episode of our podcast necessarily. It's like 3 hours long or something, just absolutely insane. Yeah. But just like the experience of realizing we were like losing our minds in real time over this episode, can never forget that. Absolutely.
And it was so early in the run too.
I know.
Like, you never,
it's wild.
Watched an episode like that. And that was the first experience watching one of the older shows for the podcast and just being like, how do we even talk about this?
Yeah.
Like
so weird. I also, I would definitely pick something out of our Unlimited because I really liked those conversations. I just don't know which one.
It's hard to tell with that one. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I don't know why, but a lot of times when I'm editing, I have like a very distinct memory of like editing like the Halloween episode of Spectacular Spider-Man for some reason. Don't know why. Don't know why that sticks out, but for some reason it's like etched in my brain.
That's so funny.
Really weird. I also really loved bringing on, there are two Falling With Style things that I really, really loved. Actually, there's a few Falling With Style things. I loved bringing on my brother as like the chef for Ratatouille. Same episode. I loved, that was Kevin, right? Who was like, oh, I learned to cook because of this movie, which
he didn't tell either one of us. No. It's like, yeah, I love French cooking and I know how, and I'm a French, like, I know how to cook French recipes because of this movie. Like,
right.
I asked him to be on the podcast because he knows Disney.
Right.
Yeah.
That was wild. So that episode, the Ratatouille episode, honestly amazing for that reason. Cause like, it was really cool for me to be able, cool that my brother agreed to do it. And I thought what he had to say was really interesting. But then also the fact that Kevin totally like blindsided us with that was incredible. Yeah. Also in the similar vein, Mara dropping the bomb that like her husband, I think is a fish, like a fish aficionado, like, yeah,
and they fish.
Yeah.
Own clownfish and no clownfish.
Which again, like that was not why we brought her on. We brought her on for something entirely different. And it turns out that like, she just knew about clownfish. It's world? We had some interesting discoveries that way on Falling With Style.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. I actually do really like, maybe it's because it's been immortalized by somebody in comic form, but I did really like our discussion about Peter and Harry late in the 2017 series, or first season rather. Mm-hmm. Like those conversations were really good because it was like a fun realization for us to have that, like, oh shit, Harry has actually been a character that I, at least for me, that like, actually, I think I've hated Harry this whole time. And like, for the first time, I realized I don't hate Harry because the show's doing Harry really well, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know how much he sucked until there was a version that didn't suck by default.
Right. What an experience.
Yeah. Our Venom Patreon episodes stand out as some of our best over there, for sure.
So good.
So there's, I mean, I guess there's more than I realize that jumps out.
Yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts. So there's a lot of good stuff. Too. Yeah. I had a lot of Simeon's. Frump is up there for me too. I have a lot of,
wild. Yeah, I also lost my mind at the Amazing Friends where it was like the seven
little superheroes.
Oh my God.
We both did.
Oh, what? That was wild. Color coded.
That was the one of my favorite clips that we made was just me like, I don't remember what I said actually. One of my favorite clips and then I can't even quote what I talked about, but it was just like trying to describe how it felt and it was just like kept escalating and it was just like, yeah, it's like you're trying to do blah, blah, blah. And then like, you're trying to play guitar and then you can't play guitar anymore, but then the strings cut your hands and now you'll never be able to play anything. And then like the stage collapses on you. It's just like kept escalating.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't even, it's this, if you don't know the clip I'm talking about, it just sounds like nonsense, but, I think we were both like frustrated with that episode and how like bizarrely written it was, but also it's Amazing Friends, so nothing ever makes sense on the show anyway. And that's kind of the fun of it.
I do
so
think
just,
we've
like,
gotten
that weird conflict
significantly better at being able to process on the fly episodes that make no sense to us.
That
I would argue
true.
We kind of did it last week and it was not a 3-hour endeavor.
Yeah. It's just sort of like, this doesn't make any sense, does it? Here's why. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah.
There is fun to hearing us lose our minds, but like sometimes it's like,
you can only handle so much.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's a little much. It doesn't need to be 3 hours long. Well, in that vein, the Spider-Woman episode, obviously.
Oh, my God. How could I leave that out?
Games of Doom, tiny guy inside a regular size guy. I had to be the one to bring that up, though.
Yeah. I'm glad you did.
Yeah. I mean, because that is another one where sort of that's a good version of us losing our minds in real time. But because of the episode is just so the ending to that episode, especially, is just so magical.
Yeah.
It's just podcast lore at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And the Midtown episode we did, our April Fool's episode.
Actually, I was really proud of that one.
I still think that's a really underrated episode because no one has ever said a fucking word to us about that episode. And like, it's not even like, oh, we put so much work into it or whatever.
Making of episode.
Well,
of that.
We did. Yeah. I mean, because we made that episode like that's our only April Fool's episode we've ever done. And like, we made an entire history of this fake TV show that has never existed and like tried to like put it in a real place in history and justify why it would be airing when it did and why you maybe have never heard of it and like why it was airing where it did. And like I watched episodes of the WB show Black Sash because like that entire cast works if you transplant that cast in a Spider-Man show and like recast them and like tried to pull from that and who those actors were. And
I also
like then
don't
we just improv the entire
exactly.
episode.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think people realize, even though we explicitly said it in the sort of follow-up making of episode, like we improv'd that episode. Like, we had a basic launching point, just like anybody would have, like, an improv prompt. But we fucking improv'd that episode of television that never happened.
Yeah.
And you're right. No one's ever said a word about it.
I haven't gone back and listened to that one. I mean, I have never gone back and listened to that one because I also, like, don't want to listen and be like, this was bad, actually, like, or anything.
No, I don't even
it's
care.
So, like,
I was
positive
so proud
in the memory.
Of it. We did that, like, really a year in or something. Like, it was like, so good.
I think it was 2020 because everybody was sort of like, we can't.
Oh,
we
that's can't, right.
Life
that's
is too right. serious to do an April Fool's thing. And I'm like, I fucking need this
all
in my
I
life right now. I need
absurdity.
To be able to let loose and just be absurd about stuff.
Yeah.
And then we did it and no one, I'm assuming people listened to it, but I don't know. We'll never know because no one said anything.
No
about
one's
it.
Ever said anything about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If for some reason our podcast ever just like suddenly blew up and we had this like active audience that we knew was out there responding to what we were doing and like interacting regularly and all that sort of stuff, I would be like, we're fucking re-releasing that thing. I don't give a shit. Like, that is going to be a re-release. These people will hear it and will respond to it.
Yeah. And your making of episode on Patreon was so good because it really was like a behind the scenes featurette. It's really the only time we've ever really done anything like that.
Yeah.
But like, because there was so much like cut material and like conversations and stuff that we had outside of it and everything like that.
I needed something like that in 2020. Are you kidding?
Yeah. God, it was such a great release to just be able to like create something that had like no stakes to it really either. Like if we catastrophically failed at it, whatever, it's an April
Who
Fool's
cares?
Episode. Yeah. But the fact that like we made this entire fake thing and improv'd it and like felt really good about it at the end of it, that like we actually created something and like pulled off what we attempted to do and made some like fun marketing for it and everything. Like I still love those like old like 2004 WB posters that I made. All that experience, like looking up KryptonSite.com for Smallville episodes and downloading the posters and studying all of them in my high school years, finally paid off. I finally got to create something based on that.
No, that's so good.
Oh my god. Maybe one day we'll do another April Fool's thing, but like nothing will ever top that. And I don't know that we ever want to put as much work in this.
Well,
anything that we did.
If people ever
one.
Said anything about it, maybe I would want to.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
If people listen to this and are like, wait, I loved that. Tell us, because we're not going to do another one if no one ever listened to it.
Or, because it was very early into the podcast run, if it's sort of like, oh, I skipped that because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
I think it's like, what, episode 30-something, like 37 or something like
that's
that.
Early, yeah.
It's around that area. I think it was called... What was the episode called?
I don't know.
The Breakup. It was called The Breakup.
That's right.
if you go to our website, wallhoopwebsnappers.com, you can easily find it by looking up under episodes, movies, and specials.
Yep.
It's under that category. Looking up right now, it's only taking me a couple seconds to find that it's episode 37
Beautiful.
Entitled The Breakup. and you can check it out right now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's so wild that that just like dropped in the feed with no, like, we didn't draw any special attention to it.
Which,
like,
maybe
it just was that week's episode, and nobody
asked,
was like,
what the fuck,
I don't remember
was.
This show.
Right. I mean, I'm not even looking to have tricked people. Like, I feel like if you're savvy enough, you'd see it and just be like, that wasn't, obviously it's not real, but I would think that people would be curious enough to be like, what the hell is this?
Right.
And then see it's April 1st, you know, and then to get it. But
yeah,
I don't know. The non-reaction to this day, I know we're just like trashing our,
I
know, right. Like, I know that we're like trashing our listeners right now, I guess, but like, it's never, it is just so like, it is just never not baffled me that like not a word was ever just even tweeted, just be like, that was weird. Like, even that enough, it's just
to be proud of something and bummed that no one acknowledged it.
Yeah. It's not even, again, like you said, like if people hated it, at least I'd know that it's sort of like, well, we took a swing and it didn't work out. But the fact that it's sort of like, the only reason I know that anyone listened to it is because the network gives us numbers. And then I'm like, are the numbers wrong? Cause this says people listen to it. I don't know.
I would be curious, like, how many people listened to it and just took it purely at face value and were just like, that is really interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And never gave a second thought to it.
And then, like, the next week,
we're
just like,
what?
What? Yeah. What? Where did that go? Because we did cover weird stuff. Like, like, we covered a couple episodes of, like, the anime when Spider-Man showed up, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or what was the other one? Was it Young Avengers? Future Avengers, thank you. So like, there were other things they probably came later that we covered, although Discourse we covered early as well.
We had already, it's always surprises me how early we just were, just like we're gonna 20s. Do Marvel Discourse right now. Like, it was like episode 20. It's the bizarre choice that we made back then. I don't know why we did it so early, but I'm glad that we did.
Yeah, me too. Whatever. I mean, we knew that when we did the structure this way, that like, it was going to allow people to start listening to different shows. Like, which Spider-Man cartoon do you want to know? Like, we always had a long-term idea for how we did things. So like, that first year is a little bit weird because it's like, oh, we're going to cover a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But now, like, in our fifth year of doing this, or as we approach 5 years or whatever, like, now if you go onto our website, you can see like, oh, I could listen to three whole seasons of the 90s series, or I could listen to coverage of the entirety of Spectacular Spider-Man. Like, that's kind of what we envisioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can jump on. It's always funny to me. Like, I love when people are sort of like, oh, I'm catching up to listen to all of them. But it's always funny to me because it's sort of like, you literally don't have to, though, if you don't want to. Like,
We aimed to make a menu.
Yeah, exactly. So, Midtown, man. But I mean, the other ones that were on my radar were Marvel Discourse too, just because it's like, that's the lengths that we go to weird shit. And weirdly, one of the weirder pulls, because it's not very weird, I think that our episode on Turning Point, that was one of my first things that came to my mind when I thought of the question too. Our episode on Turning Point, which is the third season finale of the 90s show.
Thank you.
It's like, it's not a particularly like, it's not like we don't lose our minds or anything like that. It's like a pretty like standard episode for us. But I do think I re-listened to that recently. I just think it's one of our best in terms of like just having a really good conversation about a very good and like very notable, well-known episode of a show. I think we like effectively talk about it. And I think it also has a very good like Gwen Stacy related conversation about the Gwen Stacy effect and everything, which comes up a lot on our podcast. But I think we really distill like the whole why the death of Gwen Stacy's story can be like a problem and how it's, you know, been told and becomes a pattern, but also the story itself is good. And like, you can see here, the 90s show is an example of like how you can effectively tell that story well, even if it's still like maybe a problem that it's a pattern in the world, it doesn't make the story bad. Like, I think we approach that complicated conversation really, really well. And I think that that's like just one of our best episodes, just as an episode of a podcast, you know?
I love that. Cause it's just, it's not like, we did anything special for that. It just is a good episode of our show.
Yeah. It's not like there's no like bits or anything. It's just like, I think it's a good, if you want to hear like a, you know, what I think is a really,
you could send out to be like, this is what Walloping Web Snipers does.
Yeah, yeah, I think it digs into it really well. And then, of course, you know, all the Hydra Man episodes that we did kind of along those lines, too.
I figured you were going to bring that up, but as you were talking about the Turning Point one, I was like, I can't believe I didn't think of the Hydra Man one. Like, we literally interviewed the guy who wrote it. Like, that's one of the coolest things I've ever done in my fucking life.
Yeah, and I do think that we sort of stand up for an episode that, like, no one else has talked about in the same way that we have.
Yeah.
I think. I think make a case for an episode that is, like, an incredibly good masterpiece for important reasons that no one fucking ever talks about in that way.
Yeah. That is in a class of its own, I think, as far as what we've done. But it also reminds me, like, not that this is a great episode of television or even necessarily one of our amazing episodes of the show, but, like, even our conversation on the Big Wheel episode, I'm like, hell yeah, we did that. We had that conversation. Like, we fucking talked about Rocket Racer in a way that no one else does.
Yeah, the way that the internet loves to hate that episode is sort of like, maybe this is actually a really interesting commentary on institutional racism. And y'all, a bunch of, like, white Spider-Man fans just aren't really even bothering to pay attention to it all because it has the Big Wheel in it.
That actually might be, if I were to create a package of episodes to send, like, say, if that it were one of those things where someone was like, send us a package of your episodes, we want to see what your show is about. Like, what you do, who you are, what your show is about. Mm-hmm. I think in that context, it would make it in there for sure.
I think,
like,
so
Hydro Man would be in there, and that would be in there from the 90s show for sure.
I agree. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah. Like, we've just done a lot of really good episodes of our podcast.
Well, it's funny too. We have. We've also just done a lot of episodes of our podcast. Yeah, I'm like, what have we done?
Like, some of them, like episodes of Spider-Man shows, some of them maybe are a little forgettable, but that's what happens when you do 200 episodes of a podcast.
Yeah. We are rapidly approaching 200, baby. Just wild to think about.
Yep.
Oh, boy. I'm trying to think of other questions I was thinking of today that I could ask.
Do you want just like an easy one?
Yeah. You got like a easy, silly, light one?
No, I mean easy as in, like, obvious, actually.
Oh,
that was
still
the conversation. What are your thoughts on Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, that's a great question. I really liked it. I didn't really say a whole lot about it on Twitter or anything.
Why would you? It's a fucking minefield, dude.
I just want, and I don't know where to find this, like, you and I have this, and I think there are some other people individually that I could find this with, but, like, I just want, and this isn't even specific to Power Rangers, but because we're talking about Power Rangers, I just want to exist in a fandom space that just talks about the thing, like, just talks about the actual product that we consumed. Is it Watsonian, right? Like, I think that's the way Watsonian, I think, represents, like, you talk about the actual piece
of art.
The in-universe piece of art, the characters, the story, the narrative, the themes, that sort of stuff, as opposed to the outside stuff where it's, like, all the production stuff, I don't hate production stuff or anything, but, like,
there's a difference between, like, the interesting making of the art that you're watching and sort of the context in which it plays in. Because I do think that, like,
making
part of
the art and selling the art are different things.
Right. And also sort of, like, the conversations around it and just sort of, like, I don't know. Yeah. I think in the context of, like, a franchise that sells toys, that's when it starts to get kind of annoying and, like, yeah, like, how many ads or whatever. But I think, like, the actual, like, the art and then sort of, like, how the art was made within the constraints that it had.
Yes.
And, like, what it was trying to achieve. I think those are all really interesting. Because one of the things
I didn't want to say I don't like production stuff, because you and I talk about production stuff and I find it really interesting.
That's a good clarification.
It's the art itself and how the art was made, right? Which sometimes
rather
is going to include
just
some,
like,
production stuff, as opposed to the conversations
brand,
about the franchise as a whole or the brand as a whole or how things are sold and marketed. It's fine if people care about that. I just don't care about that. And I feel like that is such a massive conversation right now in, like, every fandom space and in the context of Power Rangers, particularly Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. I've tweeted about this before. Like, it just makes me not want to talk about it in a public space because I feel like it's going to just be met with things that aren't bad, but that I just am not interested in talking about.
Yeah.
Like, how it was sold or marketed does not, for me, affect the actual piece of art that I consumed, right? So, so
does it mark the,
to answer
the
your question of
the...
why would you tweet about it? That's why I would not tweet about it.
Yeah, does it mark the death of the franchise? Does this mean that they're not going to adapt Super Sentai anymore?
I don't care. Like, can I tell you something, Derek? If Power Ranger, if Hasbro shut down Power Rangers, I wouldn't care. Like, I still like have so much Power Rangers.
Years of material. There's like a bunch of comics I haven't read yet, and games I haven't played yet.
Right.
Like,
I shouldn't say I wouldn't care, but like it wouldn't break. Yeah. Like it wouldn't make. I would be sad we weren't getting new stuff, but like there's so much of it.
There's also seasons that I've like never rewatched before that I would love to revisit.
So much stuff. And I guess I should say like the show, because like the comics, sort of a separate entity. But anyway, that's a whole, you know, you and I could talk about Power Rangers forever. But since you said, what, you know, why would you want to tweet about it? That is context for me. Like if anybody has ever wondered why I went from tweeting a lot about Power Rangers and talking a lot publicly about Power Rangers to almost never talking about Power Rangers, that's a big reason why. And that's a me thing. It's not necessarily an everybody else thing. It's probably a bit of both, if we're being honest. But that's why. So I watched it and I said that ruled and felt exactly the way I wanted it to. And that's my thoughts, like, distilled to their core. Like, I thought it was, if you told me that you were doing a 25-year anniversary, 30-year anniversary, 35, 20, whatever year it was, if you just told me you were doing an anniversary celebration of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, this felt exactly the way that I would want it to be. It respected and honored, like, the core of the medium, which is such a unique medium, especially in American entertainment. And it aged it up only like half a notch. You know what I mean? It like acknowledged that because this was the 30th anniversary, because it was filming entirely its own stuff, because it wasn't beholden to anything really, being on Netflix other than its own sort of identity, they were able to do a few things here and there that they would never do on the show. And that to me felt like the perfect degree of like aging up or like maturity. I listened to a podcast review of it that had nothing to do with the Power Rangers community. It was like they just watch Netflix things, so the whole thing is each week they cover something different from Netflix.
Nice.
And so the host of the show has no familiarity with Power Rangers, is at least 10 years older than us, and was just like, it just entirely missed me and my kids don't watch it, so I don't know anything about this. And then the other two people on it were very familiar with Power Rangers, so it was really cool to listen to that and see like what is the reaction from somebody who knows nothing about this, being sort of like guided through it by people who know a lot about this. And they described it perfectly. They said, like, you know, people have had conversations about dark, mature Power Rangers for so long, and we are all like adult people who've watched action movies and seen like gritty stuff. This felt like the perfect sort of degree of quote gritty or quote darkness that Power Rangers should kind of ever be. And I fully agree with that, especially if specifically meant to like celebrate Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I thought they just fucking nailed it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I second all that. I think a USA Today review of it that I really liked a lot, because it was the writer clearly, like, I think was on the same wavelength, where it's just sort of like, this is like one of the few sort of like nostalgia revisiting things that isn't trying to like pretend that it's like something that it's not. Like, it's like Power Rangers was never made for just like hardcore adults or whatever. It's not a thing that like would make sense to be edgy. So it makes sense that it's just like, this is a thing you could watch this special with your kids and they wouldn't be like traumatized or whatever by it. But there's still a level of maturity in it that like Mighty Morphin didn't have. They can deal with death in a way that like the show normally doesn't.
If only.
I
would love a cartoon.
But like they can deal with it in a way that the show normally doesn't, but it doesn't sell out the fact that this is meant to like sort of tap in to your inner child in a lot of ways. And I think that it really like excels there in a way that like I feel like some reunion specials often don't. Like, you don't have to pretend that the character's in the exact same place that they were 30 years ago. They've obviously changed and had lives, but also like doesn't like try to dwell on that either. It's just sort of like, yeah, I don't know. Billy was in space and now he's not. Zach is a congressman now. Sure, yeah.
And they all know each other. They all know each other. They've all interacted. They didn't belabor that point, even though, like, yeah, it was significant that Walter Jones and Johnny Ong Bosch were seen on screen together for the first time ever. They don't belabor that. They let you know, basically, through the way they interact that, like, yeah, of course they all know each other. It's been 30 years. They were all Power Rangers. Like, we don't need to explain why they know each other or acknowledge, like, wow, so you're the guy I've heard of. Like, it just, it was, they handled that gap so well.
Right, because, I mean, they only have so much time to do it. I think, like, one production thing that I found interesting is, like, they only filmed it, like, 12 days. Like, they just treated it like an episode of television.
When I heard that, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, but it's also, like, that's so Power Rangers, though, right? Like, it's always been a show that's, like, on a low budget, that's, like, super quickly done. Like, it's wildly did. And then, like, when I watch it, like, the second or third time, and with not knowledge, I was just like, there's some scenes where it's sort of like, oh, they absolutely did this in one take. Like, they'll, like, somebody will say they're
looking,
like,
at you, Steve Cardenas.
Oh, Jesus. But you know what? has he ever been a good actor?
You're like a 50-year-old man trying to do, like, a jumping kick.
Right.
I can't
and
do
also,
it and have never been able to do it.
And most of them, haven't acted in, like, years either. Like, not most of, you know, like,
Yeah,
like Steve Cardenas, I think he basically retired. Like, most of them had kind of retired from acting.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I'm here with it. There are scenes like in the command center when it's like someone will, like, say a line, walk in, say a line, pause. Someone else walks into the frame, says a line, pause. Yeah. And it's
there's
like
a lot
it's
of
the
like
most,
hitting
like,
your mark and hitting your cue that you can see, like, very clearly.
It is the most, like, high school play thing I've ever seen. But it's like, yeah, because they had 12 days and they did it in one take, but like, obviously. But it's also Power Rangers. Well, nobody's ever been a good actor on Power Rangers.
Right.
Well, that's kind of what I like about it.
Yeah, you were talking about a review. Like, it was so clear to me. Like, look, I've always been so irritated at how certain reviews end up coming into being, where it's like, this was something I identified really early on as someone who, like, does, like, never as a kid knew anything about, like, production, reviewing, anything like that. It, like, wasn't on my radar. Even still, I remember being really annoyed at reading reviews for movies in the newspaper and being like, it's so clear that whoever wrote this doesn't even like horror movies. Why are they reviewing a horror movie? Like, and I feel like the way that this special was reviewed, it was so obvious to me, like, when the person writing it actually had, like, a familiarity and understanding with what Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was outside of just, like, remembering how it felt when they were 7 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's sort of like, what's the point of a review that's sort of like, I'm coming in from an objective perspective where I'm not familiar with it. It's like, who? I'm sorry, but who's watching the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 30-year reunion?
Who's watching
if they didn't
any Power
already,
Rangers,
if they didn't already have, but also, but I'm saying, like, what is the, who is the review for?
Oh, yeah,
because what normal person is going to turn on Netflix and be like, I've never seen a single episode of Power Rangers, nor have I ever cared about it or read about it or know anything about it, so I'm going to watch the 30-year reunion of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Like, that person doesn't exist, so, like, why, you don't really need to write a review from that perspective, you know? Like, that's the whole review culture thing, honestly. That's just like, either you are the type of critic who is, like, can be aware of what your biases are. So if you're writing something that isn't to your liking, you can make that clear, that it's like, I've never watched the show before, so I'm going to do the best I can to figure out who it's for and maybe do what I can for that. Or you're the type of critic who, like, only writes for the things that you're interested in. Like, you can go one of those different tracks, you know, depending on how much money you want to make, I guess. But like, and what your publication is forcing you to do. But I think you do have to be in that perspective that it's sort of like, when something fundamentally isn't for you, part of your job as a critic should be to understand who it is for and if you think it would appeal to them. And you could still put a bit of yourself in it and be like, this didn't work for me, but I could see this working for children or something like that. And I think a lot of critics don't do that now, unfortunately, which is a bummer.
Well, there is certainly stuff to critique about the special, like, no doubt.
Oh, sure,
but
sure,
like,
yeah.
Anybody who was perfect, like, comparing the special effects of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 30-year reunion to literally anything Hollywood's ever done, I'm like, you've missed the point, and I don't care what your opinion is. Because, like, you've just missed the point. Like, you don't know what you're reviewing.
It's a 55-minute Netflix special Power Rangers. Like,
with
a trash budget. If it was anything other than, like, this feels very much like, I know it's Netflix, which also makes movies, but it feels very much like an old school TV reunion, which, like, if you know, you watch fucking like Brady Bunch reunion or whatever,
yeah.
Like those things are made like a TV show that just happened to have an extended running time. And I think that if this was anything more than that, if this tried to be a major Netflix movie, I think it would have failed catastrophically, because that's not what Mighty Morphin Power Rangers
right.
is.
This could be one of Netflix's sweet spots if they had any idea of what they wanted their like programming slate identity to be. Like, it's perfect for this, right? Like, the podcast I was listening to also sort of like invoked like the Fuller House sort of vibe, where it's like, yeah, no, they're making the show the same way. Like, if you're expecting it to feel different because it's grown up or because it's happening now versus then, like, you're missing what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the Fuller House thing is a great example, because whatever your feelings on that show one way or another, I think that the thing that show succeeded at was just nailing the exact same tone and look and structure as the original show, which is like, if you liked Full House, you're going to like Fuller House. Like, that's what it's going for.
They did such a great job with doing exactly that with this special. I mean, like, it's so clear to me. I know people would contend this, and I just feel like they're being contrarian or inflammatory. But, like, it's so clear to me that the people who made this put so much care into what they did. I mean, like, that juice bar set is incredible. That cockpit is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I know people don't like the CGI, but the attention that was put into the CGI is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were getting the biggest hits from the clips that got shown over and over again in the first season and putting that on screen and remaking it. Yeah. Which is like what you want from something like this.
Right.
And the fact that like the little deep cuts, you know, that there were still, like, if you are someone who's watched the show for 30 years, there are little jokes and references to other places and stuff like that throughout it. The fact that I know it's not like the deepest of deep cuts, but I still am just like so over the moon that there's a Too Much Pink Energy is Dangerous joke in that.
So good,
because like, you have to be embedded in like Power Rangers, like meme culture, to know what that means, you know, that's a joke at all. Like, and the fact that they like bring it out and like hammer it in and like have to take that long walk just to like justify a character saying Too Much Pink Energy is Dangerous. Yeah. I fucking love it, man. It's so hacky in like a way that I love,
but it's so clearly like again, I just feel like people who don't agree with this are just being like a pain, but like, it's so clearly a love letter to the franchise, like, for those reasons, right? There are things that are just in there, like, to the point where when the person who was podcasting about it, who'd never seen anything, was like, okay, well, if that's an Easter egg, like, just explain to me what the Easter egg is. The other two were like, I promise you it's going to be we can't, like, there's just no way to explain Miranoi to you. Like, it's just for us. It is purely just for us. I promise. Like, that type of stuff is so indicative of like a love letter to a franchise and a fan base that I appreciated every little bit of it. Even the stuff that was like sort of stupid, like the headstone of the guy that was the talk show host. Like, that was a weird choice, but like
random poll. Yeah. For real. And the fact that, like, you know, I honestly, if this was just a special that was just a bunch of fucking references and they just like kicked ass in it, like, I would be here for it. But the fact that they still found like an emotional core to this,
this is like objectively one of the best told stories of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Here's the thing. Love Power Rangers to death, been watching it for 30 years, watching it basically my entire life.
Yeah.
There's like two times before the special that I've ever like teared up or cried. One was during the movie, during the Hold the Line sequence. I get really emotional every time I watch that.
Sure.
And the 2017 movie specifically.
See, I thought you were going to say like about MMPR stuff. And I was like, that's more than I've ever cried MMPR.
MMPR. That's the thing. MMPR. It was from the 2017 movie and from one scene from it. And then the only other time was just basically any gay scene between Fern and Izzy in Dino Fury.
Me too.
And that's not really because of like an emotional reason or the show tugging your heartstrings. It's because of like seeing queerness represented in a show that I've loved my entire life and never expected to see queerness represented in it, and seen it like executed incredibly well. So like, it's not even for like, because the story may be sad. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, because that's exactly like, if you had asked me when in the history of the franchise that is Power Rangers have you cried, there would be the exact same moments, like moments in the 2017 movie or moments in Dino Fury that have only anything to do with queerness represented.
Yeah.
That's it.
Cause like Power Rangers, right. Power Rangers, love it to death. It's, I would never have called it an emotional show at any point.
No, I don't think it's not what it is.
it's not sitting out to me, and that's fine. The fact that
and Hyperforce made me tear up at least once.
Sure. But the fact that like this special fight gets MMPR and focuses so much on like fun, nostalgic shit, and yet still, I've watched it three times and I've cried every time.
Yeah.
At multiple points.
Yes.
Like, the thing,
the first
like,
time I watched it, I just was like constantly welling up. Like, I just was fucking, like, too much. I was like, this is like, holy
shit.
I think
the fact that like the show that no point in the franchise, just because of various circumstances, has never dealt with Chui Trang dying ever before.
Yeah.
Like, for understandable reasons, because like, how could they? But it's like the
but,
tragedy
like, to the
of,
point
like,
that people
never
don't even realize she was dead. Like, I mean, obviously fans in the fandom know that, but like people who grew up with MMPR but then didn't continue watching, tons of them did not know that Tui Trang was dead until the special.
And like, you know, like the fact that she's never been able to like be seen on screen ever again after, you know, a shitty way of leaving with like archival footage and shit. Right.
Right.
Like, there's just a inherent tragedy in that like we, both the cast and Power Rangers is a historical thing, and we, the audience, were never able to like see the original team ever reunite ever again because of like really tragic reasons. And the fact that like 30 years down the line, we finally get to like see that. And I think in a really poignant way from the perspective of someone who like is like younger, who is kind of growing up in the legacy of that and dealing with it in this, like, I don't know, in a way of like, I feel like dealing with it through like inheriting a legacy, there's something really beautiful to that, because it's sort of embracing the fact like this is a show that has run for 30 years. You are going to have someone that like is a teenager now that was born long after the show originally aired, that could now be inheriting, you know, the role that these people had back in 1993. Like, there's just like that sort of full circleness. There's something really beautiful about that. And like, I got really emotional. I mean, I got emotional at various points, but like, I got so emotional when like you get the memories flashing into Min's like eyes of Trini. Like, that fucking, it's so smart and it gets me so hard seeing that, you know?
That gets me. And then having, I know it's their characters, but essentially Walter Jones and David Yost talking about Trini, but probably really talking about Twi at the end, like that got me hard as well.
Yeah. Just reminiscing the juice bar. And then that transitioning into like the clip of the, of them all together while Kimberly singing, like what a fucking genius pull to find that. Cause it's like the original six together that it's Amy Jo Johnson singing a song that she wrote that's a goodbye song
to like,
that like also Tommy. to Tommy specifically, who and then like I went back and watched that episode. It is just sheer coincidence that there is a clip where like Jason David Frank like locks eyes with Chui Trang in that, like just in that moment, like, and it's just like, it's just sheer coincidence, but the fact that someone thought to like find that and track that down and then like cut it right where they did, like, it's so fucking brilliant. And like the attention that they had to pay to come up with that, to do that, you know, like,
especially because it's entirely possible that was not part of their original plan.
Yeah,
because JDF was alive when they filmed this and when they wrote it, you know, so like it's entirely possible that that wasn't part of what they initially meant to do. Like, the whole special is an homage and a memorial to Tui Trang and the character of Trini, not specifically Tommy, right? But like, that also is like the perfect way to include a memorial to JDF and Tommy. Like incredible. So I mean, if it wasn't masterful. Part of the original plan, like incredible thought that somebody had to be like, you know what, we can do that. I don't want to say throw that in. That sounded so dismissive, but like we can include this because this is also perfect. And it is, like you said, the perfect locking of eyes between them two is like, it's almost like eerie. That has a negative connotation, but it's like almost so perfect that it's like unbelievable it existed.
Yeah. It's wild. It's wild. Yeah. It's so masterfully done. And it's just like, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I know that they're under, you know, there are various reasons why no other of the original NPR cast other than Walter Jones and David Yost come back. Like, yeah. I understand that. But it kind of like worked out perfectly because we've seen Jason and Kimberly since they left. We never got a chance to see and Tommy too.
Right. I feel like everyone except those two has come back in some capacity.
Yeah. After they left. So like the fact that they did get the two that have never been able to show up in a future movie or season or crossover or whatever to come back. I think it kind of like works out great because now, you know, and getting Trini like so heavily represented, even though her actor didn't come back, you now have had some kind of like revisitation or farewell story for every single original MMPR member. It just happens to have been spread out over 30 years of the show. But like, I think that kind of works out perfectly because then, you get to honor the people who came in season 2 and 3 who also had huge impacts on the show too. So like that they're not left in the dust. Right. So it all kind of like worked out kind of weirdly perfectly despite the circumstances, you know?
Yeah. It's incredible. It's one of those things that like, there are just certain pieces of media that feel like they're like, too many coincidences needed to fall into place for them to work the way that they did. And this kind of fits in that realm, I think. Like, even though all the pieces people would have expected or wanted aren't there in the fact that like plenty of people would have liked to see JDF and Amy Jo in there. And plenty of people would have liked to see ASJ in there. Like not all the pieces people were asking for were there, but still nonetheless, like tons of pieces that maybe shouldn't have worked all still fell into place.
Yeah.
It's really incredible.
Absolutely. One more thing on it. I mean, for one, Min fucking rules. What's his name? Charlie Kirsch. Like, what a fucking killer find.
I
hope that we get to see more of her in some capacity.
I have a question about that.
But also, like, for one, she, like, gay ally. The fact she just monsters with her car to save the gays. A+.
I know.
But also, like, I love that like her whole journey is like this. It's so basic. There's nothing groundbreaking about it, but it's so fundamentally Power Rangers that it's just like, she's trying to be this hero. And then like the ultimate lesson is just like, you just like care about people and be selfless. Like the fact that her whole journey is like to stop like being like up your ass or like wanting revenge or whatever. Like none of that like edgelord shit matters. Like the core of MMPR is that these were these like goody good teenagers who were just like perfectly angelic and only wanted to do good.
Right.
And
be a positive attitude influence. Is totally ironic.
Yeah. There is no attitude in the original cast because these are like the most perfect, beautiful teenagers who just want to do good in the world. Like and like the type of person that is like a Drew role model to children. It's sort of like, they're going to volunteer and clean up the park and just like help everyone all the time, you know, to like be a mentor to everybody. And that she just has to sort of like, she's like starts out as like a normal person, honestly, just like a teenager with hangups who like who's snarky and is annoyed and like really mad and resentful about shit. She has to learn to just sort of like, or you could just like fucking just like care about people and be willing to throw yourself in front of a death ray or hit putties with your car to save a random gay couple. Like I just like, there's something like, it's so simple. There is nothing too deep about it, but that is so fundamentally Mighty Morphin Power Rangers that I love. And that I think that really just spoke with like the sort of like 5-year-old in me in a way that like, as much as I love Power Rangers, nothing about it had ever spoken to me so deeply and brought me back to that place like this has.
Well, I think one of the things I like about Power Rangers, whether it's Mighty Morphin or any other series, like, I like the fact that a lot of what Power Rangers does is straightforward. Like, it isn't that nuanced most of the time. Like, yeah. Sometimes it is comforting to be able to watch something and see these are the good guys, these are the bad guys, and to just be reminded of the things that were sort of fundamental lessons you learned growing up. Like, I think there is still value in that. And that's what I appreciate, right? Like, I've never needed Power Rangers to age up or mature for me specifically, because what I'm looking for is that exact stuff, that sort of like fundamental, like, even if they are sort of caricatures of the goody-goody teenagers, like, that's what I'm looking for from the show a lot of the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, with regards to Min Kwan, regardless of what form it would potentially take, what do you want or think or whatever, if at all, like, the Min Kwan being a Power Ranger story moving forward is?
I really don't know, because it is a weird place, because we've never seen just like a Power Rangers special that's like in universe but not really part of anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, because it's made by the same people and everything like that, like, I feel like there's, you know, she can certainly show up in a future season of the show, whether it's like in a crossover or whatever, but like, mm-hmm. I just don't know like when or how that would happen. And, you know, obviously every single fucking year there's another conversation of like, is Power Rangers ending after this? Are they continuing? And I don't fucking know. But like, if assuming that there's another season of
yeah,
the show,
not even that. Like if guaranteed you get
her?
More Min Kwan content, what do you want that story to be, or what do you think it could be or should be?
Whether it's
comics, TV show, whatever.
I don't know. I think that like, I mean,
like, where
what
does
I,
she go from here?
I think the most likely thing, not necessarily what I want, but I think the most likely thing is that like, anytime they ever want to have a crossover, she can easily guest star, and you can have your Mighty Morphin representation without having to pull an actor from Mighty Morphin originally.
Yeah.
And it's totally justifiable and fun. She's a legacy character at this point, and everything. And it's a really easy way to just throw in your Mighty Morphin representation for a crossover, which is fine with me, or team up or what have you.
Does she operate solo in those scenarios? Like, is she a solo ranger?
Yeah, or she can just, you know, they can do like they've done in the past where it's just like she just shows up and like references her team or something like mm-hmm. that. Or I got your distress call or whatever, you know, yeah. Like they can write around that. It's just fine.
Sure.
But I do think that there's a really easy. Yeah, I would love to see some like comic stories with her where it is her just sort of learning the ropes, and maybe she's like, because I feel like the implication that I get from the special is that like, everybody of the Mighty Morphin team has their powers or whatever, but they're kind of doing their own thing. They're like part-time Power Rangers because there are plenty of other teams. So I think that it would be a thing where she's not constantly teaming up with them, but like she trains with Zach and does some fun Power Rangers-y things, but like they're not going out every day. And then eventually she tries to go and do her own superhero thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that we've ever seen a Power Rangers story where it's like a Power Ranger trying to operate independently in a traditional superhero way. And I think mm-hmm. that there is something fun that you could do with her that involves the original MMPR cast as like supporting characters, but she's not always doing it like with them as a team.
I think the closest really we fun. Got was probably like the MMPR Pink comics, where like Kimberly was separate from her team and then could operate on her own because she had access to those powers through Zordon or whatever, and then like kind of had her own temporary team by the end of that thing, but it was still like Kimberly, you know.
Yeah, I think her being in the role of this like legacy character, where like her kind of her whole identity is the fact that she is a legacy character, I think lends to the possibility of her being a good character who can kind of travel through the different Power Rangers, like, you know, teams and worlds and everything like that. Like, she can be a character who just visits Miranoi and like has an adventure there.
She's a bit of a like, Hyperforce type thing where it's like, she can go anywhere. She can meet anyone.
Yeah. I think that would be a really fun use for her, honestly. Yeah.
I think that'd be really interesting. Yeah, I think if there's no restrictions, I mean, if there's no restrictions, it's probably comics. But I do like that. I think that's good. I love the idea of like Min Kwan learning to be a Power Ranger from her two Power Ranger dads. Like
yeah,
who both
that.
Are so like good. like, especially now that she's probably on the edge of 18 years old or whatever. Like, I don't know if that means she goes off to college or whatever. I don't know if that means that Zach can finally go back into politics if he wants to. That was sort of a weird thing from the special, but I get it. Billy is obviously not around all the time. So, like, there is plenty built in just with the two of them sort of, like, default co-parenting this kid. I think that's plenty fun. I think also, though, like, it would be interesting to see. I've seen some folks talk about, like, does she build her own team? Does she go out and do stuff? It's like, she's one of very few, like, children of Power Rangers with powers. And in most cases, it's not the same situation as her. Like, Nick is not the same as her. Nick's parents are not your average Power Ranger. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. In some continuities, isn't JJ eventually
a
Power Ranger?
In the comics, yeah, he's like an SPD Ranger.
Right. So, like, she's in incredibly small company, and if you wanted to, you could. It would be a more natural fit for JJ and Min to have some sort of connection, and Nick not be in the picture at all. Plus, who wants to see that? But, like, there is cool stuff you could definitely do with even just established stuff, you know, the mythology that they've been building that I think could be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think also if they ever did decide to, you know, do a season without Sentai footage, which, you know, again, that's a thing that, like, always comes up in conversation, may or may not ever happen. I love the classic Power Rangers use of Sentai footage and stuff like that. But, you know, I could see a universe where they don't do that.
I'm okay with it as long as they can, like, if they can stay the course of, like, what the core of the show is tonally.
Yeah.
I'm fine with them not.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's part of the charm.
Yeah, it's part of the charm in seeing the puzzle being, you know, put together of how they, you know, retrofit it and stuff for their show. But I would just bring that up because if they ever wanted to do, like, a fully American no Sentai footage show, I think having Charlie Hirsch bringing her back is, like, your sort of, like, you know, the core of it, and then building a team around her for that season, especially if they want to just go back to the Mighty Morphin well and just be like, she gives other people Mighty Morphin Power Ranger powers, you know, like, I think that would be
your Zio quest, but it's just Charlie Hirsch finding other legacy heroes for the other Mighty Morphin Power Rangers who are now deciding to finally retire.
Like, I feel like, if they wanted to go back down that well, which is always a possibility, you know, I know people would bristle at that, but, like, if you wanted to do a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers show, I would rather that than just doing a reboot that's just Mighty Morphin Power Rangers again, you know?
It does feel way better to me than just, and the comics have been extremely successful at it, but the comics are, I think, you know, there are, you know, 999,000 universes where that comic does not work. We just happen to be in one where it worked out very well. Thank you, Kyle Higgins and everybody else, for, like, really caring about that and making it make sense. But I'm with you. I would rather, if they're going to do more Mighty Morphin, it's way more appealing to have a new generation of Mighty Morphin than just have a new Jason, a new Kimberly, all that jazz. Right. I also think it's not insignificant that they cast an actual, like, 16 or 17 year old in this role. We don't have here in the United States what Super Sentai has, which is actors who are willing to be their character for basically the entirety of their career. Not all of them obviously do, but plenty of them do. It's, like, a great honor to be part of such a iconic franchise. And I think a lot of Power Rangers actors feel that way, but I don't think Power Rangers treats them well enough for them to necessarily want to make that lifelong commitment. You know what I mean?
You have to get, you know, a real paycheck, I think, for that.
And I'm glad it sounds like, I don't know the details of this, but it sounds like maybe David Yost especially really fought for everybody on Once and Always to get paid properly, which is great. So, love to hear it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's insignificant that she is like 16 or 17 or something at the time of filming, because it makes it very easy for, even over just the next 5 years, if it takes however long, to figure out doing something next, that she is still available and still young and still well within the realm of what, like, a typical Power Rangers actor might be. Even if she comes back 5 years from now and then does something for 2 years, she still hasn't, like, aged out by comparison to so many Power Rangers actors in so many different seasons. I mean, in Lightspeed Rescue, they're all just, like, full ass adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, they were playing teenagers, but many of them were full-ass adults, so...
Right. It's like, once ASJ was, like, the one, like, actual teenager right. or something.
Once you get to Zio, and it's sort of like, Billy, I know you're a high school... You're, like, a, yeah. You're a high school senior, but... no.
The hairline says otherwise, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it feels significant that they cast an actual teenager in the role.
I think so. I think so, too.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were hoping that she, you know, can carry into some role in the future, whether that's, I don't know, whether that's just some, even if it's just like one episode of Cosmic Fury where she just happens to be relevant right. or something. Do you think there's connection there? I don't know enough to know if there is, but plenty of people make compelling cases.
It would be cool, and I mean, it would be doable. I mean, even if it was like a brief cameo, like she was in New Zealand, I'm sure, while they were filming Cosmic Fury, you know, so like it's entirely possible. I think the only hesitation that I have is that one thing I do know about Cosmic Fury is that it's only 10 episodes. I don't know how long those episodes are, but like,
and it's like them going into space.
Right. So there's not like a lot of room for them to play. And I would rather them not sacrifice whatever story they're telling just to like throw in some cameos. It's like, I'm okay if Cosmic Fury is its own thing and, you know, they can have fun references to like the places that they go,
sure.
but like, it's not like the crossover event because we got the 30th anniversary special with this, like, I'm okay with that, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't need every anniversary to be like a giant crossover with multiple, you know, Power Rangers in it or whatever.
Well, especially because this special, I think, was an incredible 30th anniversary.
Right. I think that they very much pulled it off. I think sometimes quality is better than quantity.
Absolutely.
You know, so, yeah, so I would expect that if she does make an appearance in Cosmic Fury, it's not a super significant one. I think it would be a fun cameo, but it's not like she joins them for an adventure. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I would like to be surprised because I think that I would love to see her interact with that cast. Yeah. I think she and Izzy would get along really well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
She is an ally after all.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just hope is just that this is not the only appearance of Min Kwan we ever get. I think it would be such a miss. Even if we never see her in television ever again, even if it's not Charlie Kirsch, you know, which would be a bummer, but like, even if we only ever see a comic continuation or a comic adventure or something like that, I just hope we don't get zero more Min content. She just is such a cool character. It was such a cool way to handle that.
I agree. Last thing on this topic that I have, I really love how they recreate the opening credits as the credits.
That was such a beautiful surprise. I wasn't expecting any credits.
Yeah. Me either. So fucking A+, and like just the transition from like their old cast shots, credit shots to the current ones. Like, I love that kind of shit. That I eat that up. Like, feed me more, daddy. That could have gone on so much longer. Like, I love it.
I know.
So good.
The fact that I know why they didn't, because they were doing such a specific recreation, but the fact that it didn't include any sort of like Adam or Aisha, I was like, you could have given us just the tiniest little bit more.
Look, fun criticism. I understand that it was a weird situation because like, what would you do with those characters given
for sure?
You know, have your black and yellow Rangers in their role, but they were kind of done a little bit dirty. Like they really had nothing. They really contributed nothing to it. It's kind of a bummer,
especially when I think of Karen Ashley. Cause like I could have understood if it was like Johnny on Bosch is like still booked and busy. So like, if he only
they
could
got him
call
at all,
in,
pretty great.
That's fine. Like, I think it's incredible. Yeah. I think it's incredible. They got him at all. So if he were the one that could only call in from SPA 6 hours away or whatever, like, I get it. But it was kind of surprising that Karen Ashley was in the same role. It makes sense because they're both part of the, where do they come from? What's their school? Whatever, that crew.
The Stone Canyon.
Thank you, the Stone Canyon crew. Yeah. So, like, it makes sense, right? And if there's no Red Ranger, it makes sense Rocky is in that role. But I don't know what more I would have done. It did feel like...
Yeah.
You know, if there were more things, they probably made the right decision to not have them be heavily involved, because I don't know where else they would. But
right.
I think a lot of people agree that man, we would have liked to see a little bit more of Adam and Aisha.
Yeah. It was a tough spot from the beginning. I wish they could have just been like in the command center as support or something like that, even if it's just, say, they're the ones with Alpha deploying the Megazord, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah. They could have given them something else to do. Again, you don't want to overclutter it because there's already a lot going on in this 55 right. minutes. So I appreciate the constraints they're under, and it was a weird situation. I don't know how I would have rewritten it or whatever anyway. So,
well, that's the thing that's so hard, right? I feel like a lot of criticism I'm seeing thrown at this is simply stuff they didn't include. And I feel like that's kind of a hard criticism to stand super behind, because it's like, there's no way for us to know what they considered and cut for the sake of the quality of the special. You know what I mean? So like, if they didn't use a specific Zord formation that I like because it's cool, like what is the tank, whatever they call the tank one, before it stands up, because it technically can do that.
I think it's just tank mode.
Yeah. Like, would it have been cool to see that? Yeah. Do I think they probably considered it? Yeah. Do I also believe that they probably decided, you know what, there's just not room for that? Yeah, I absolutely believe that. So
have the money and the budget to make that CGI.
Right. Well, that's a thing that, I mean, not that anybody's getting their Power Rangers news or behind the scenes information from us, but like, it does bother me a little bit that people are like, I don't think it's wrong to critique the CGI because it's not great, but I do think it's a little bit like, ignoring the reality for people to be like, I would have just preferred a guy in a suit, because it's actually more expensive for them to do that. Like, that's CGI.
That's why they use Zord footage so much. It's because that's honestly.
And if people think they didn't want to do that, I think they're kidding themselves. Of course, they would have preferred to make a suit.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Yeah. People generally don't understand that CGI is just always cheaper than anything practical. I love practical effects, but like, that's why we don't see it very often.
Right.
But
I would have preferred it too. And I think if they could have done it, they would have. So the fact that they didn't, to me, says, they just couldn't. There's no way. Yeah. It wasn't in the budget.
It also, it kind of pisses me off because like that really grossly like undersells and kind of underrates like how the art form that like tokusatsu has created of like those practical, you know, Zord effects and suits that people are in. Cause like that shit is like a really complex art form.
Yeah, you don't just
that
do
is
it.
incredibly, yeah, it is incredibly expensive and incredibly hard to pull off. That's why like the people who are good at like kaiju movies and stuff like that and Super Sentai and tokusatsu in general, that's why they're so good at what they do, is because like it is a huge undertaking and challenge. Mm-hmm. And like, that's why they always fucking nail it, because if you're going to do it, it's a huge undertaking. So you gotta fucking nail it to make it worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I feel like it also ignores a lot of the CGI that was incredible. Like, I get what people are talking about, but I feel like they're so narrowly focused on the fight on the moon and just like fully ignoring all the recreated shots. Like all the recreated stuff they did.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, for sure.
So mm-hmm. good. Yeah. Also, they were at least smart enough to have it at night on the moon. Or not at night, it's in space, but like on the moon. You know, they made all the right choices based on their budget.
Yeah. It's also, I'm sorry, I feel like just missing the point that it's like the Dino Megazord fighting a Robo Snizzard on the moon.
On the moon.
That's the coolest fucking
shit
in the world.
So
I don't care how garbage it looks like. That's the fucking coolest thing in the world. Are you kidding me?
And I'm not saying it's like not a valid critique, because I know that's a whole conversation happening right now.
Whatever.
Leave me
it's
alone.
Fair.
I don't care. I know what good CGI looks like and I know what bad CGI looks like. I'm not saying it's great CGI.
It's also like,
but you're
it's
right.
cheap CGI on a
it's
budget.
It's cheap CGI.
Like,
we know. Like, you know, like, we're all aware, but you're right. Like, that's such a cool idea. The fact that they even did that, like a Megazord fight on the moon, is so fucking cool. You know, previously there was just comics that would do shit like that, right? Like, I don't think they ever did that on the show. They didn't make a whole new set for the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Megazord fights so that they could do it on the moon. You know,
right.
That's cool as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved it. Not, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I love it. Seen it's it cool. three times. We'll definitely watch it again.
Yeah.
So
good.
Good shit. Real good shit.
I know. It's the kind of thing that I will definitely continue to watch probably forever. I'll just as someone who doesn't rewatch a lot of stuff, like that will definitely be in the pantheon of things that I could just put on, you know, 3 years from now and be like, oh man, you know what I really want to watch? Once and Always.
It's a real comfort watch. Like I can already, it already can tell if it makes me feel good when I watch it in a way that like, even things that I love a lot, like don't really strike that same chord. So
yeah, it's feel good. Feel good stuff.
I knew throwing out that question would be like, that's going to be half of our runtime for this.
No, that's perfect.
I'm glad. Yeah.
I'm glad you did, because I feel like it's also the perfect place to just close out, because it was such a beefy conversation. I feel like asking anything else kind of feels silly after all that.
Absolutely. I have nothing else to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch, this will be the one thing we get tons of feedback on, and I'm going to ignore all of you. I won't actually ignore you all. But if you have things to say, you should say them over at patreon.com/wallopingwebsnappers.
Can. Yeah.
Because we have a Patreon, okay?
We do.
And it's cool. And there's a lot of good stuff over there. A lot of it is Spider-Man related, but not all of it is. Sometimes we do talk about other things like Power Rangers, Once and Always. And check out our Discord. You can talk about Once and Always in there too if you really want to, or anything we talked about in here. In fact, there's a whole channel dedicated to AMAs where you can ask questions just as you think of them. So you don't have to necessarily wait. You can just dump them in there. We will find them and make sure they get added to the next AMA. Or, you know, sometimes we'll just answer it if it's something that makes sense to answer right then and there. There should be a link to that Discord in the show notes. You can also find us all over the place. Derek, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Derek B. Gale. You can also find my podcast Gimmicks, which looks at the high concept, experimental, structure breaking, gimmicky episodes of television with a new show and guest for every episode. Find it anywhere you get your podcasts, and on Twitter and Instagram at Gimmicks Pod. And I'll also plug again, if you're in the Richmond, Virginia area, I'm in a play this week. I guess it's closing soon because it closes on the 21st, but if you haven't got your tickets, get in there. That's the reason why we're doing this AMA, is because my schedule is so crazy and we don't have time to record regular episodes. So record an AMA so I can have time to be in the show, because it's taking up my whole life right now. But it's a really good show. Definitely check it out if you're around. It's called How to Bruise Gracefully. That's at the Dominion Energy Center, presented by Cadence Theater. You can just Google that and you'll find it. Or, you know, check me out on Twitter. I'm sure I will have links to it while it's up. What about you, Doug?
You can find me on Twitter, Icky Bully. You can find me on a podcast called Victory Road, Pokemon. You can find me on Novel Gaming, Books and Video Games with my friend Katie. And you can listen to us on a monthly podcast we did called Falling with Style, an ongoing Pixar movie marathon, where we watch Pixar movies. And we'll be soon watching another brand new Pixar movie. We're getting so close, and I'm so excited. Which means I also have the unique opportunity to do the research for that one in real time as it's happening. I guess technically I could have done that with Buzz Lightyear, or with Lightyear, but I didn't. All those episodes are out now, so if you want to catch up before Elemental, you can do that. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com for a full archive of all of our episodes we do together, and follow Walloping Web Snappers on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod, or email us at wallopingwebsnapperspodcast@gmail.com. Of course, please rate, review, and subscribe on all podcast platforms, because if you like what we're doing, somebody else will too, and they just haven't found us yet, and those ratings and reviews really do help. Have us show up in results. So more ratings and reviews means if people search Spider-Man, we are more likely to show up. So that is very, very helpful. Next week, we are going to be talking comics. We have been reading over on Patreon Salad and Ahmed's run of Miles Morales, the Spider-Man Miles Morales comic. We have lots to say about it. We have had lots to say about it. And we are going to take, I think, the first year of that comic
run.
First two years of that comic run.
Yeah.
And we are going to drop it in the main feed. So if you are interested in comics, or you've read those, or you're not necessarily a patron yet, but want to see what we do over there, we're going to drop that in the main feed next week. So definitely check that out. It'll be a beefy one, but a good one.
Yeah. Enjoy.
See ya.